Okay, we are back in order, and we'll move now at just a board discussion, but before we do that, Dana, you want to finish presenting the staff recommendation?
Thank you. The application review process is designed to gauge the soundness of the proposal, the soundness of each application section, as well as the soundness of the proposal overall, and it's also designed to gauge the capacity of the planning committee to develop and implement a high-quality charter school. To assist with the evaluation of an application's and an applicant's soundness and capacity, the review team, consisting of a total of 8 evaluators, 2 external, 6 internal, utilized the South Carolina Department of Ed's application guidance and the evaluation rubric, and conducted an interview of members of the planning committee. To be sure, significant changes and improvements were made to the application, and no reviewer took issue with the value and the rigor of a Montessori education. And I may add that my son received a preschool and elementary public education exclusively, and it's made all the difference in his life as a middle schooler. It's had a huge positive impact on him. The overall recommendation is to deny the proposal and this was a unanimous decision. The review team found significant application deficiencies, notably in the critical areas of intervention, evaluation, special education, and discipline that cannot be remedied without major revisions that would significantly alter the nature of the proposal. An interview of the planning committee failed to put to rest questions and concerns the review team had about need, support, understanding of public school obligations, and federal and state requirements. We asked a number of questions of the applicant committee, no fewer than 15, to gauge understanding of such things as assessment, intervention, special education. And we also inquired into how the disadvantaged members of the Camden community, as well as communities of surrounding counties, such as Sumter, Lee, Chester, and Fairfield, would be served. I do want to point out that, as I did last time the applicant submitted a proposal, that the applicant is sharing information that was not included in the narrative or during the capacity interview. And as a result, we have seen a presentation today that's designed to respond to the recommendation report that the review team developed and was placed in the hands of the applicant at the same time it went to you, which was on Monday. Thank you.
Okay. We need a motion in order to have discussion. Does anybody want to make a motion?
Discuss the application of the Montessori school
in Camden. Well, it can't be to discuss. It has to be to approve or deny.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I move for denial.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Chair.
It's been moved and seconded to deny the application. So now, discussion.
Could there be additional questions for Ms. Reed during our discussion?
Yeah, sure.
All right. There was some confusion around the 3K, 4K tuition, low tuition, federal funding, depending on disabilities, you know, whether it be during the intersession or the summer session or the regular session. Could you clarify that a little bit for me?
Sure.
And what that does to but how that applies to a budget.
So the 3K and 4K, as most of you all know, and we did receive a legal opinion about this a few years ago when one of our charters wanted to add 3 and 4K. Fee could be charged by a charter school to serve 3K and 4K students as long as it was comparable to that charged by the local school district in which the charter would be located or surrounding. And that is the case here. I mean, the fees are comparable to that. However, students with disabilities, so preschool students with disabilities, could not be charged. And there's also guidance from the State Department of Ed that at-risk students, however a district or And there is some definition of at-risk, obviously, in the statute. However, that's defined, could also not be charged. So a big question for the review team, as and that's reflected in our report under Sections 2 and 3, Evidence of Need and Support in Enrollment, is that there was discussion during the interview of using a sliding scale and fundraising to defray some of the costs. But outreach activities didn't reflect that, the intent. You know, there's not a transportation plan that's really, you know, very grounded and established to reach students. And there was a limited discussion of how this school would ensure enrollment of this targeted class of students, especially if the students that are feeding the Montessori program, which I'm very familiar with that model, are going to be the 3K and 4K. They're charging, you know, at that front, you know, at the gate. So
right. And the ABC vouchers would not mitigate.
It would mitigate for the
funds.
It would mitigate. And the application itself, you will see a reference to ABC voucher and need-based scholarships in the executive summary. But there, it wasn't woven into the application. We did not see alignment, the budget aligned with that. We didn't see the educational program aligned with that. We didn't see sections regarding, particularly regarding intervention for struggling learners. So if you have the planning committee stated that they would use these intercession periods, which are fee-based, to meet the needs of students who were lagging behind. It was really part of their kind of response to intervention program. However, it's a fee, and so we really struggled with a charge being, you know, assessed for that service when the premise is to provide a program that's going to reach more people and reach more disadvantaged populations. So there was a lack of alignment. Thank you, Amanda.
Well, I just want to make sure I'm trying to. It is legal to charge fees for 3 and 4 year olds. I think we have a couple of charter schools doing
that,
don't we?
We do. Yeah. Okay. And we have one in the district that charges, and the other three do not charge.
Okay.
Two.
Okay. And then I'm not sure I understood why that was an issue for this school but wasn't for the ones who are doing it.
The other school, in one case, they added a preschool program after the charter was approved, and they had started, one actually came to us and said it was going to be part of a private program so they could charge fees, and that wasn't an issue, obviously. The other one was East Point, and they wanted to add, and there wasn't an issue with that program because it wasn't, the premise of this program is we want to convert. It's not a private school conversion. I mean, this
right.
private school, the application really focused, at least at the beginning of it, on the intent was to expand this option to more people,
right.
and particularly disadvantaged.
Right.
So the mission and the vision of that program was different than this.
I still don't understand how that relates to the 3 and 4 year olds. Why? I'm confused. If it's not a problem for some schools, and why is it a problem for this school?
I don't think we've ever said it was a problem for any of our schools. It is that when we as reviewers take a mission and what's been articulated, a mission for a charter is to move from a private school that is limited in terms of the number of students it's going to serve.
Right.
It wants to expand. It says it wants to do that because there's a lot of members of the community and surrounding communities that couldn't afford it.
Right.
We don't see that the model that was articulated is consistent with that.
But aren't all of our schools supposed to serve everybody?
Yes.
And
yeah,
and so if some of them charge a fee, why isn't it inconsistent?
Because the mission, I believe.
But the mission of all our schools is to serve anybody who wants to come.
Yeah. Well, I guess the question becomes is,
I'm confused.
Yeah.
If another school comes in, and if, are we saying that if a school comes in, and I guess this isn't arguing either way about the motion, I'm just really confused. If a school comes in, are we saying that if they say, our mission isn't to serve everybody, then it's okay to change, but we're going to let them have that mission? Y'all see what I'm saying? You don't?
I don't.
Okay, the problem here is that they've said their mission is to serve everybody, and therefore charging.
No. Their mission is to expand the coverage of the current
service
to a broader
population. Right, which would make them like a public school. All public schools are supposed to have a broader mission than most private schools do. Isn't that right?
I'm not sure what you're...
I am really confused about what we're saying here. Whether it has nothing to do with the school, it has to do with a public school by its nature is supposed to have as broad as it can be. Everybody's welcome. Well, we know private schools they might be welcome, but they got to be able to pay. And so it does limit things. So I guess what I'm saying is, if the problem with this one, by their very nature, if they're going to become a public school, they've got to expand who they want to serve. Am I not right?
A few things I'd like to say. If you look at the student enrollment and how that's projected over time, it's 3K and 4K have the most seats. So mm-hmm. one thing that struck the review team was that the majority of the seats that are going to be available from day one until year 10 at the end of the charter life cycle are going to be charged. There's fee-based. So that was problematic. If you look at the upper grades, there's 6-7 seats available. So there is a concentration of cost at the front end. And then, of course, without a definitive decision as to whether this group would go with grandfathering or not, there aren't going to be a lot of seats available at the no cost.
And that's how there's that was 24. Answered when I asked the question.
No, I understand. But I'm trying to decide how we move forward. Not with that, because I understand. But okay, if one of our current schools, decides to open a 3 and 4K, and they're going to charge for it. That's okay, right?
As long as those fees are it's okay under certain circumstances.
Well, it's legal. Okay, it's legal.
It's legal under certain circumstances.
Okay. What are those circumstances?
As long as the fee they charge mm-hmm. is commensurate to the fee.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I got that.
Well, you asked me. So.
Okay. Well, what I'm saying, though, is try to rearticulate it. We've got a school right now. I'm trying to think of one. I can't. But an elementary school. They decide to expand into 3- and 4-year-old. And they then plan on charging a fee that's commensurate with the fees being charged in their locale and commensurate with anything else in the law that I don't know about. My point is they're going to charge. And we say that's okay. And if they do that, then the preponderance of people coming in that next year are going to be in the 3 and the 4K because it's wide open. There aren't replacement slots. It's wide open. All I'm trying to figure out is for future, how is that different? I don't see where that's an issue here where it wouldn't be an issue in another setting. That's all.
Well, there's another critical difference.
Okay.
The 3 and 4 feeds, that's the feeder point for the approval. It dies if you don't use that as a feeder point because it goes back to the issue. And this is why I asked the question. If you are entering a high number of students at the upper grade
levels,
you wipe the program out.
I get that.
Because it changes the culture of the school. You've got to enter a high number of students.
Right.
So it's not only is it fee-based, but it's your feeder point of the program.
Okay, let me ask you this. In the schools we have, or any schools that decided later, but the ones we have now, that add a 3 or 4 or start with a 3 or 4. Isn't the purpose of that you're getting kids that will then go on into the big school?
Students can enter at any point and it have no impact on the school.
And they don't have the heavy concentration of seats.
They don't concentrate entry level at that point.
Well, sure they did.
One question. One scenario here is positive thing they have going in this 3-4 Ks. You know, supposing it's a lottery situation because you have too many applicants, there is no financial situation until they get accepted. Then they start approaching, can you pay, can you not pay? And then they go through that. The question becomes, so I think they're doing the right thing there. The question becomes, it's funded for kids that can't afford it.
Well, they said it was, I don't know.
Well, and that's, I think that might be a big issue, is how do they pay for, because I think one of the situations might be the underestimation of the poverty level, amount of kids going in.
And I would like to add that that estimated poverty level, and thank you, Bobby, for making sure I highlighted that, seems low. Kershaw and Lancaster County have a poverty index on the 2014 report card of over 70%. Sumter, which is one of the counties that they're hoping to pull kids from, 82%, and Lee is over 90%.
So I think the initial scenario is that you get a multitude of children that come in at 3K, 4K that need it paid for.
Well,
the question becomes how.
That I get.
And
let's, I'm going to move on from this.
Okay.
I'm just trying to understand it.
And let me explain why.
I understand the motion.
There are a number of issues that transcend the issues that were raised by staff.
Mm-hmm.
The General Assembly purposefully, by design and intent, creates distinction between private school operations and public school operations.
Sure.
And there are advantages to being a private school, and there are advantages to being a public school. But you can't move back and forth. One of the answers they gave to the issue of going back and picking up students that are behind, they said intercession. Okay, but the intercession cost. Okay. The other issue, the same people who are teaching the intercession are teaching in the school. So unless you're terminating the contract and recontracting those people, then you're paying a fee-based program out of public funds. And, I mean, I don't know if Eric wants to be put on the spot, but do you think that passes the scrutiny of the public school test to charge for intercession?
If it is part of the academic program, that would be a problem.
And that's the whole issue.
Well, okay, well, that I get. I understand all that.
Because you're saying that some of the funds that the teachers pay and all that,
right,
and all that would be state-funded to supply for a
fee-based
intercession program.
Right.
Okay, well, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, that wasn't what I was trying to get straight in my head.
No. But yeah. I'm explaining
right.
part of the reason for the motion I made. I mean, I think I owe it to my fellow board members to explain why, in addition to the issues the staff raised, which they raised some very legitimate issues that I don't think can be ignored, but there is a critical issue we're trying to operate. They had three options. They could remain as a private school, and none of this is an issue.
Right.
They could apply to a school district, and I don't know what issue that their district would have. Or they could apply to us. If they apply to us, we have an obligation, I think, to ensure that all the students in that school receive a free, appropriate education.
And I think it goes without saying that if they're planning on doing something that's illegal, that's can't do that.
Yeah, we couldn't condone that.
Go ahead.
I think I can take Ron's point and go one step further, and this is based off of or something that happened during the summer, a question that I had in the Lowcountry from an individual. There are two sets of funds here, Dana. There's for the 3 and 4, there's private tuition, we can call it tuition, fees, whatever you want to call it. And then for the other grades, or other levels, there's taxpayer funds. So we've got two funding sources. Did the was there any question in the application, or did the applicant discuss, well, first of all, these monies are fungible. They kind of, they can flow back and forth. I don't know what the market
will bear. I don't think from an accounting standpoint.
Well, no, they shouldn't, but is it possible for public funds for the upper to be supporting the lower pre-K or vice versa to lower tuition? I don't know what the market will bear. I couldn't tell you what the tuition is or the fees. Are they any lower or any higher than what's average in that area? Could the money
stay? The more successful the higher grade levels are, the less they can charge the three and four.
Yeah, which is not, which would be unfair to the other preschool providers in that area. Were there any questions about anything like that?
Yeah, those have come up, but obviously they can charge. They can charge for the 3 and 4K. The monies, there are monies that the district pulls in each year that's earmarked for any of our schools that serve pre-K, and it's based, has in the past been based on free and reduced lunch counts for five-year-olds throughout the district. And then it is at the discretion of the superintendent to decide how to divvy that money up. So in some years, Wayne, you might wish to elaborate, you decided to give it all to the 3 and 4K programs in our district that were not charging. And then in other cases, you could just across the board,
yeah,
say, depending on enrollment.
Yeah,
high
poverty areas of the state are the ones that we concentrated those funds on originally, and when the East Point came in, that created a problem then with whether or not we gave them money. And that was when we did, we had the legal research to see that they could charge as long as they were keeping as commensurate with local districts.
Okay. Other comments, questions?
Can I kind of steer away from this particular discussion? And just say that I heard one term, I don't remember which of the young ladies said it, the young lady who works for Richmond One, I think, you used the term spectrum, and it was in relation, I think, to a discussion of assessment and performance. And I was wondering if that term is the Montessori translation, talking about Rosetta Stone, for assessment or performance? And if it's not, is there such a translation in the world of Montessori? Because I don't know it all that well. Maybe our external expert had comments along those lines? No.
Preach.
We did have a content expert, so his questions, his concerns were, and again, he was part of this decision, was more along the lines of it feeling like still a private school proposal and not really embracing the public aspects and public obligations. And I would certainly agree with that, but I, and maybe Ellie, you could speak to this a little bit, because you did talk about assessment, mm-hmm. you know, early on in the before we interrupted you with our questions. Could you speak to that? Is there such a thing in Montessori? Is there a test?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm no Montessori expert. I think that, you know, Montessori public schools can have the same summative assessments as all public schools, and
okay.
needs to then be intentional around the alignment crosswalk between their formative assessments and what they're doing on an interim basis and those summative assessments that come at the end of the year. I think, you know, for me, I'm, you know, the pre-K, the fee-based pre-K is less a concern for me than is the question of just readiness based on multiple scenarios. And there is one scenario where I still can't figure out if they can't grandfather kids and they do actually do a great job on outreach, what, you know, what do all the upper grades look like in their first few years? Because, you know, theoretically, it could really dramatically change their population of students. And those upper grades could really change. And so I think what I was looking for is just really more detail around within the Montessori approach, which I mentioned before is itself sort of a, it's kind of like a tier one intervention already. You know, what are some differentiated approaches for kids that come in? So if you can't apply the same levels of control around early entry, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, what does it look like? So just one example might be, you know, you're going to want to change both kind of timing and instruction, but also the delivery of the content. So in Montessori, there's an emphasis on phonetic learning of, like, early language. It's phonetic, so sound and then letters. But for kids to come in on an elementary plane, and they're far behind, but they've been exposed to a ton of text, you actually would then think about phonographic, right? Because that would be more suitable for a kid who's coming in, hasn't been, you know, brought up in the Montessori way, is far behind, but has been exposed to a lot of text. Those are the kinds of things that I think when we've been having conversations about what will you do to adjust, make adjustments in a public setting where theoretically in some grades, even upper grades, you might be serving a large number of kids who are coming in far behind with different skills. And I see that manifested also in special education. You know, it likely is the least restrictive environment for most kids, but for some kids you're gonna need to pull them out. They're gonna need to have fewer distractions. They're gonna need to have paraprofessional support. And so those are the kinds of things that I both didn't hear in conversation that I was actually looking forward to hearing in conversation, and that I didn't see substantiated in the budget. I didn't see that kind of allocated for in the budget. And then the final example I'll give is they talked about just today, you know, kind of recognizing MAP is a very expensive interim assessment, and so, you know, moving to Mastery Connect, it's cheaper. Like, to me, when I hear things like that at this stage in the process, it just kind of shows me, you know, we are adjusting, kind of learning as we go along. I would have preferred to have seen intentionality around how MAP fits in with their just overall assessment scheme, how they're going to budget for it, because it's a really important interim assessment that is fully aligned with their mini assessment strategy, their interim assessment strategy, and how that, you know, connects with the summative assessments that they're now going to be accountable for as a public school. So those are just a few examples.
To follow up on that, we had, David and I had a conversation in regards to testing, security and testing in public schools.
Sure.
Which, you know, any public school teacher or principal or proctor will tell you, will scare you to the roots of your hair. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure that, you know, this school, having operated as a private school for so long, would, I'm not sure that they have an appreciation for that. And it's something that public schools live and die by. And I know Ron says we don't have the right tests yet, but there are tests that we do have to take, and there are measures that have to be adopted for, you know, for the security of the test booklets, the proctors, the teachers, you know. Children go into the bathroom during the test for that. I mean, you know, it's a really stringent set of rubrics.
Right. Yeah, and if I could just add kind of a global point, you know, over the last few weeks, we've received a lot of data on how our kids are doing. And I think not only am I new and coming from a district that had an incredibly high bar for entry, but I'm looking at our data, you know, and as a whole, all of our kids. And when you look at it, you know, less than half of our kids are ready on ACT Aspire in grades 3 through 8, less than half on math and on ELA. We lag behind the state in math pretty significantly. You know, you need a 21 on the ACT to be considered college ready. Our average is 17.6. The statewide average is 17.9. For African-American students in our district, it's a 15.2. And so when I'm just looking at the current state of the students we serve, I think I'm just incredibly mindful when thinking about the folks who will have the privilege of serving our students, and, you know, for whom we're certainly going to get behind them, put our arms around them, and support them however we can, but just wanting to really see a level of detail, alignment, intentionality around how to best serve all kids coming in from different levels, coming in at different points in their life courses and at different grades. And I think that's, you know, that's where I saw gaps in this application and in the conversation that we had in the interview.
Okay. Any more discussion? I think we're ready to vote. Okay. All in favor of the motion, which is to deny the application. So I'll just remind you that a yes vote is to deny. No vote is to approve, or is to not deny. So all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Were there any opposed? No. Okay. Then the motion carries.
Can I make a comment at this point?
Yes.
This group behind us is obviously working extremely hard, and it seems like they're so close. Mm-hmm. And what I just care about being on record or not, I just, you know, we're here to create an innovative schools, and Montessori to me is innovative, I suppose, in our current state of affairs. And, you know, you got someone that's been doing it for so many years, I just want to see them, I want to see him get there.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to, and I have a feeling with as many letters of intent that we have coming through for this coming year, you know, maybe we need to discuss how, you know, we can't hold hands, we can't do any of that kind of stuff, but I want to make sure that we're getting this type of information to these applicants on an early stage so that they know exactly what we're demanding of them. You know what
right.
I mean? I want to make sure that we get that to them in an early, early stage. And we may be at this point, but I just want to just make sure that, you know, there's no surprises at the end. You know what I mean? These people know exactly what they need to get through to get right here and get an approval from us. Because, you know, hopefully they won't stop and keep knocking on the door. So.
And I'd like to make a comment about the recommendation. There was one mention in there that that troubled me, and I am really, and the reason I spend my time on this is that I care deeply about trying to provide better education for every kid in the state. Every kid in the state. And I think too many times when we say that we're thinking about that means doesn't mean everybody. And what I'm saying is that this sentence, one outreach activity at information booth at the Colonial Club appears misplaced in light of numerous references to desire to serve those without means to attend a private school. First of all, when I read it, the first thing I thought about was what they said, that's somebody that has an elitist prejudice against people who go to a horse race, and there are all kind of people working around horse races and horses. I mean, I'm a boater, and I'll never forget when somebody decided to pass a law adding taxes to big boats because they thought that would secure people who could afford big boats. And guess what happened? All the people that made boats went out of work because all the boat factories closed in the Northeast. And I see that same kind of thing in this. I really do. That bothers me. And not only that, that doesn't say that they didn't have outreach to others. The criticism here is that they did have outreach to some. That's just not right. That's not right. That would be the same if somebody on this board criticized for going around to the churches, because that was just to some people who go to church. And I see that as a social statement that we just don't need to get into. It's a judgmental statement to me, and I would feel the same way if it was applied to any other group of people. I know I run the risk of looking like I'm doing some kind of reverse discrimination. That's not it. I just read that and thought, why would we criticize them for going anywhere? I mean, if they go to a jewelry store that only sells jewelry that costs $1 million and pass out things like this, is that wrong? As long as they also go to the state fair or the county fair? I mean, you get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I just think we can leave those kind of comments out.
That's good feedback.
Okay. I got that off my chest.
There, this is interesting. My analysis of this is different than maybe any that I've had since being on this board, however long we've been on this board.
Long time.
Long time, too long. In that frequently I sit here and I take a vote and sometimes influence my colleagues to take a vote that will eliminate the possibility of students availing themselves of what's being proposed, mm-hmm. because we take a vote and it's dead when we take that vote. We didn't do this time. This school is operating. I'm assuming we'll continue to operate. Mm-hmm. We haven't denied students that are currently availing themselves of the school. What we have denied is students that might have the opportunity in a public arena to participate, which causes me to then put a different test on the whole issue. Because the students who are in the school can continue in the school. We didn't take a vote like we normally do and say this school won't operate. What we've done is said the students that cannot now attend the school because of financial reasons or other reasons won't have this opportunity. And that's hard for me because I'm a believer in Montessori. I don't believe it's innovative, but I do believe it's an important, it would be important to our portfolio of schools. It's a shame we don't have a Montessori school. And so when I read the application, that's where I was sorrowful in reading the application, because at that point, I did not see how I could support a school that did not do just what you got through talking about, really expand the opportunity, because they weren't expanding the opportunity if the very thing that's being implemented to remediate or to assist students who are having difficulty isn't available to them. We're right where we're started. We have a private school opportunity with public school resources. And if it came 50 million different ways, it wouldn't change. As long as that were the case, I would not change my position. And as I said, the reason it's difficult is because I think that the Montessori initiative is a powerful initiative that benefits students of all classes, all colors, all everything. It is not right for all students. I hope the folks that presented to us today realize that Montessori is not the panacea for every student. But I wish we had a Montessori school in our portfolio, and I hope that we at some point will have another opportunity to consider another application or an application that would allow, at least allow me to support.
We do have a Montessori school.
Oh, that's right.
I'm sorry, ma'am. This is a board discussion.
No, I just wondered if after we're over, would I be allowed to make a comment? After you're finished?
No, ma'am. I mean, you can come back next time for public comments. But once we go into a board discussion, it's a board meeting. That's a board discussion. I'm sorry. If I did that, then anybody who wanted to walk in and.
Well, I meant because I signed up.
What you did, you had your public comment. And so that's the period for that. And I have to stick to that. That's codified, actually.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
This certainly wasn't easy, and it's kind of with heavy heart. I mean, I remember my first hearing observation was this team, and I was impressed by them. And I think they come at this with the absolute right intent and spirit. I don't question that for a second. And I think they're really close. I really do. And so, I mean, I'm glad that they're going to continue serving kids and, hoping there's a possibility the conversation continues. But I absolutely, when you talk to John, you talk to his team, I think they're doing this for the absolute right reasons. have a lot of potential, solid on governance, solid on operations. It's really just a few key important things where I saw some gaps and would need more. But I think all those things are addressable in the future. So.
Okay, now, question for us, and we've got a group that's been waiting since 9:30 to 10 o'clock. It's also quarter to one. Do we want to go straight into the next hearing, or do you want to take a short lunch break?
I told them that we're going to have a 15-minute break.
Okay. So they're fine.
Is that long enough for them to grab something to eat so they don't think?
Did you say 50 or 15?
15. Yeah, I told them that we're going to break for lunch and have you.
I agree. I think if we're going to, we ought to give them time to go get something to eat.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
However long that takes.
Why don't we say 45 minutes?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because.
They have to go somewhere and come back.
What do we do?